It's very important to note these incidents. In fact, Dr. Ambedkar included them in more than one speech on the reasons for conversion. They're just two of his personal experiences of being branded untouchable, designated untouchable. Two of his personal experiences of the caste system. They're experiences of pain, of course. The pain that men inflict upon their fellow men. They're experiences of dukkha, in other words. It's obvious that they are. They were terribly painful experiences for Dr. Ambedkar. And they were the starting point for his own quest, his own spiritual quest. Dukkha is the beginning of spiritual life. In one famous description of the Buddhist path, we find the formula, in dependence upon dukkha, suffering, arises Shraddha, faith. It's because of dukkha we embark on a spiritual quest. Maybe actual painful experience or just a sense of unsatisfactoriness. That gets us started, it gets us thinking. In Dr. Ambedkar's case, the pain was the constant sense of being discriminated against, of being vilified, of being abused, of being thwarted, not for any wrong he had done, but because of the community, the caste into which he had been born. Many, many people suffer in this way in our world. Discrimination manifests like this in many forms. Many people experience the pain caused by such discrimination. And frustration and anger can arise because of it. And it's certainly true of Dr. Ambedkar. They arose in him. But even though this pain is suffered by so many, it's rare to find people who respond to it in a creative way, in a way that makes them question deeply the established order and makes them want to change their lives. Dr. Ambedkar did just this. The pain and frustration caused by the tyrannical social structure he was in motivated him to change. There's a very, very touching moment where there was a great kind of turning point for him. He said early on, he was a real wastrel. He was a real, very lazy and resentful and angry. A lot of, people from these communities suffer from great resentment and anger. You can imagine. And he used to steal money from his aunt's purse. His mother died, and his aunt was bringing him up. And he used to steal, change from her purse and go off and buy things. And then one day while she was sleeping, he was about to go and steal from her. And he looked at her, and he just felt overwhelmed with, remorse and his love for her, and remorse because of what he'd been doing. And he just couldn't do it. He couldn't steal anymore, and he realised that he really had to do something. This is when he was a very young lad. And that was when he decided he must get some education. So, he started to really work hard at school, even though it was so difficult, studying and being treated so badly. And, yes, that's how he eventually went on with his studies in not just in India, but Britain, Germany, America. Studied law, economics, politics, anthropology, languages, extraordinary number of languages, had an extraordinary range of learning. Became a highly capable man and eventually became the first law minister in the government of India and the architect of the Indian constitution. But it's very interesting, as soon as he was able, he began to educate others. This is what he really did after the disappointment in Baroda and various other disappointments that followed. He devoted himself to working for the upliftment of his people. One of the most important areas of this was his education work. He started colleges in particularly deprived areas, charitable institutions, and set up colleges, tried to get the best teachers in. Interestingly enough, most of the teachers in the colleges in the early days were Brahmins. He said, we need the best, so they're going to be teaching in our colleges. But more broadly, he educated his people in terms of telling them that caste untouchability is nonsense. Don't accept it. You know, one of his early slogans, which I think might even be a left-wing slogan, was educate, agitate, organise. Educate, agitate, organise. And the education was, in this broad sense, was telling people, get rid of the superstition. Don't submit to superstition. And, yes, agitate. Bring about change in your communities. Bring about change in your societies. And organise. Come together in a coherent way. His pain, his dukkha, he knew was not merely personal. Millions were suffering in India because of caste, because of untouchability. He even believed that India was suffering because of caste and untouchability. India would be much better without it. Generally, it would be better for everybody. But there was this profound identification with the downtrodden. He never turned his back on his people. This is something that would have been very easy for him to do, as so many you can see in Indian political life, Indian public life. You know, people can, you can create a very comfortable situation for yourself, but he refused to do that. Had this incredible empathy with his people, an incredible dedication to their cause. And that's why Indian Buddhists, without hesitation, call him a Bodhisattva. And there's lovely stories about Dr. Ambedkar's dedication. There's a story about a group of journalists who were in Delhi trying to get a quote from a politician. Something had happened late at night or in the small hours of the morning, and they were going around Delhi trying to find a politician who would give a quote. And the only place where the lights were on was Dr. Ambedkar's place. So they went in, and the first thing they said, well, how come you're awake at this hour? He was in his study writing, because he was always writing. And the reply was, apparently, I'm awake because my people are sleeping. Somebody has to watch over them when they're asleep. And there's a more personal story. That might be part of the mythology. I don't, it doesn't matter. I think it expresses the spirit of Dr. Ambedkar very well. But there's a more personal story, which I was told by one of our order members in India named Shailendra Bodhi, who's now very, very old and blind. But he met Dr. Ambedkar when he was a young man, very poor, uneducated, and he knew he had to get education. So he thought, well, the only thing I can do is go to Dr. Ambedkar and get advice. So he went to Dr. Ambedkar's house in Bombay, and he was allowed in, shown into his office, and Shailendra Bodhi said he was really frightened because it was, you know, quite a big house, and, you know, Shailendra Bodhi was in rags, more or less. And he went into the great man's office and said, can you help me? I want to get an education. And Dr. Ambedkar smiled and said, yes, well, what do you want to study? He said, I don't know, I just want to get an education. And Dr. Ambedkar said, well, you will need to find out what you're actually going to have, what you're going to study. But he said, yes, I can help you. And he personally wrote a note for him to take to a local hostel associated with one of his colleges, and said, well, take this, say that, and he signed it, say that you've seen me, and the people there will look after you. It's a lovely, touching story, and shows, you know, Dr. Ambedkar, you know, if you read his stuff, in a way he's very fierce, very, you know, there's this sort of almost anger in his writing, and he always looked very stern in the photographs, but he had this great tenderness as well. So the origins of the conversion movement are found in pain, in dukkha, and in Dr. Ambedkar's dedication to the downtrodden. It's also found in the devotion of his followers too. They have incredible trust and faith in him because of what he did for them.